This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football. Brentford FC, come on you Brentford, come on you bees, come on you Brentford, come on, sit
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And we're coming to you. I'll tell you something. I said the Pride of West London podcast. And the immediate view that came into my mind, if you've seen the photograph out there, we'll see if, actually tell you what we'll do. We actually might try and make it the photograph for this podcast, actually, as you see it, where you've got all the players celebrating. In the background was a little sign saying Pride of London. And the players are celebrating at Chelsea after beating them 2-0. This is coming to you the day after Brentford beat Chelsea 2-0 at Stamford Bridge. And like I said to you, this is the Pride of West London podcast. My name's Billy Grant and I'm sitting here still smiling away, chuckling away after a fantastic evening spent at Stamford Bridge. We have my mate Laney and all sorts of characters. Laney, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, mate. As you said, yeah, buzzing from last night still, like most of the Brentford fan base will be. It's, you know, we've waited long, long years, hard slog it's been at times, looking at QPR, looking at Chelsea, looking at Fulham in the top flight, and us kind of never even imagining that we'd be going to these places and giving them a bit of a tactical lesson. And we sat top of the West London League. And as the games are running out, we stand every chance of finishing in the Premier League ahead of all our West London rivals. So it was incredible last night. The fans were great, the players were great, and the pubs were great before and afterwards. So yeah, no, a really proud day to be a Brentford fan.
Definitely, a lot of pride of West London ringing around the place. And like I said to you, we're going to talk about Chelsea game a little bit later as well, because obviously there's plenty to talk about in that Chelsea game as well. But this week, I mean, we're just going to briefly hark our minds back and forward to the fact that, as you know, Brentford are booked on this USA tour. I know maybe a lot of you that are out there who are listening and thinking, this has got absolutely no interest in this, it's got nothing to do with us, it's USA, it's a pre-season friendly, and we're not going to be involved. So we're going to, you know, talk about it, like I said to you, just a little bit, just to let people know who are interested and primed up that, you know, we've actually kind of, I've done the complete U-turn and I've actually gone out and bought tickets for the flights and everything and matches and everything like that, because I just couldn't bear it any longer, actually, especially after spending Saturday after the match with the USABs who were in the Globe, and I thought, I've got to do it. So I've changed my plans, you know, I'm coming back from Nice and I'm coming back early and I'm flying back out to America and I'm sleeping overnight in the airport and there's all sorts of nonsense going on, but looking forward to it. But what we've decided going to do is that we're going to probably dedicate a little bit more time in the next podcast, which is the Liverpool podcast, talking about the USA tour, because there's quite a few things that we probably want to talk to you about that. There's just some interesting sort of things to look out for, like the ticket buying experience, I have to admit, wasn't great. The tickets are very, very expensive. Some people turn around and saying, well, you know, it's not meant to be for the UK fans, it's for American fans, but it's kind of like, you know, it's interesting how our, inverted commas as I use the word, product is over in America as to how it is over here as well. Talking about actually how there may be some events out there, some places of meeting up points, some drinking joints as well. All things like that, you know, we'll talk about that next week on the podcast, just to just give a little bit of a taster for people. Then obviously we'll do something a little bit nearer the time, because we've still got a couple of months to go on that, which is all good. As look at my emails just popped up, your flight is booked on Delta Airlines, you know, as well. My flight down to Atlanta on Delta from New York after I've spent the whole night sleeping in some bar. I'm trying to do an all-nighter in a bar in Williamsburg kind of linking my flight from New York down to Atlanta as well. But you're obviously looking forward to that as well, though, aren't you, Lainey?
Yeah, I am. You know, like yourself, it's like I think it was a heavy dose of fear of missing out. And, you know, having been to, you know, see Brentford play in the Anglo-Italian back in the early 90s, you know, I think I would have been kicking myself if I hadn't have gone to that. You know, we had such a great time in Italy. Obviously, the football itself was, you know, pretty meaningless, and it will be the same this time round. You know, it is a pre-season tournament, and you're right to say it's not really designed for us to travel to. But, you know, if Brentford are playing anywhere in the world and there's a chance of being there, you know, you want to say that you were there. You know, it should be an incredible trip. There are lots of positives and there are a lot of negatives, and as you say, we'll go through that in a lot of detail next week, including, you know, some, you know, as we're both out there, we're going to do some besotted events in and around the fixtures, some live podcasts for Brentford fans who are travelling, and for US Brentford supporters, which is a growing army, so we'll gives us a little bit more time to plan a few more things, and I look forward to having a chat about it, because it's going to be a landmark tour that we're invited to. We'll embrace it. Whether we do that every year or not, we'll have to see, but this time we will.
We'll see. I mean, we might even dust off the old cameras, actually, and bring back the old Besotted video blogs as well. Like I said, you know, we started doing those. If you go and check out Besotted on 1992 on YouTube, we've got videos going back all the way back to 2013. We've been doing video blogs for ages. You'll find that from every match, pretty much every single match. So like I said to you, if you're a new fan, go to Besotted 1992 on YouTube, and you'll find loads and loads of videos, including, I mean, there's videos like, you know, the game that we lost against Doncaster, which some people don't want to talk about that, but we actually documented that whole... We did lose against Doncaster, you know, when we actually missed out on promotion on the last game and the last kick of the season as well. We've actually got that whole game documented from in the pub beforehand, in the game itself, the penalty, the missing of the penalty, the full Monty, and after the game as well. It's all inside there. So if you want to get yourself a little bit of Brentford history from the fans' perspective, just go to Besotted 1992 on YouTube, like I said to you.
So come a long way, Bill. Yeah, we've come a long way.
That's right, yeah. We might dust off those cameras again just for one little trip, eh? But anyway, like as they say, listen, oh god damn it, like you say, as we're moving forward, and we moved forward last night, because we had a big game last night. We had a big game down at Chelsea last night, which I'm still recovering from, and I'm sure lots of you are also recovering from that one. What a good night that was. We're going to go away, have a little drink, come back, and then we're going to talk about that game against Chelsea. Stamford Bridge, good hunting ground for Brentford. Been there twice, won twice. And then looking at our West London rivals again, you know, if you look at their records, they've been there, I don't know, 17, 18, 19, 20 odd times. And I don't think they've ever won Stamford Bridge, but, you know, we've got 100% record at Stamford Bridge, so it's doing all good. Tell you what it's going to do as well, because obviously we played Chelsea on Wednesday. We also did play Aston Villa on Saturday. We're just going to just quickly, briefly talk about the Aston Villa, because also we need to hark our minds back to that too a little bit. We're going to go to the fans in a second to hear what they had to say after that game. But it's almost like the Aston Villa game, there was a bit of disappointment, Lainey, because we played really well and then we kind of got tacked back when they scored a goal in the last 10 minutes to give them a point. The Villa fans, as you'll hear on the clip, were very delighted that they got a point out of that game. We were slightly disappointed that we didn't get all 3 points, but if anything, you could say that may have set us up for the Chelsea game.
Yeah, I think it probably did, because I think, you know, the players would have seen Aston Villa, you know, them equalising so late as a missed opportunity. Aston Villa were one of the form teams in the Premier League. They came to the GTEC in, you know, having won, you know, five or six on the trot, I think it was. And they were not as good as they had been, and Brentford... really deserved to win that, and it would have. I think it would have kind of spurred us on to kind of just dig a little bit deeper, because it was just a bit of a lapse at the end of the game. And we allowed the pressure to build and build and build, and we didn't clear. Whereas at Stamford Bridge last night, there was a lot of pressure on us. They had a lot of possession, and I know you've got some thoughts about that possession, but in the final third, Brentford were just exceptional against Chelsea, against, you know, on paper, even better players than Aston Villa have got. So I think the Chelsea game happened as a little bit of a reaction too, but I think it just, you know, it showed it, or underlined that you can't switch off for a minute, and we didn't switch off for a minute last night, or we didn't switch off for a second really. They had a couple of little chances, but you know, we sprung to get that all important second goal, and it was just lovely to see Brian and Bumo smashing it home. I know it took a little nick and a little deflection, but you know, he deserves a goal, and he came on. He didn't sulk. He chased down Sharda and Brian and Bumo. We're going to be seeing a lot more of those two together.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, okay, look, what we're going to do, let's just go over to the fans. First of all, let's go to the game on Saturday. Listen to what the fans had to say after the Villa game. Then we're going to flip into the Chelsea game yesterday to hear what the fans had to say straight after that Chelsea game.
They're a decent team, and they came at us at the end when they were getting a bit more desperate. But I thought for most of that game, we controlled that, and we had some pretty decent clear-cut chances. Onyeka should have buried that. Shardy's, you know, missed an open goal. Probably, you know, saw his name up in lights, but there's a lot of good stuff out there today.
Should have buried that game, actually. We had at least two clear-cut chances. They really had one and scored with it, and that was all they needed. Disappointing result. We move on. You know, let's remember the good times. Let's remember what we did against Chelsea last year. So looking forward to Stamford Bridge on Wednesday night.
It's a coulda, shoulda, woulda today, isn't it? I mean, we did play really well against a very good side, I thought. But taking our chances, that's premium, isn't it? And we didn't really do it today.
I thought we got away with it today. Thought Brentford were the better team. Although we hit the post in the first half. I thought first half, Mbeumo stopped Moreno getting forward, which is our outlet. And then the second half, it actually changed with Martinez coming off. I thought we were shaky at the back. But got away with the point, so onwards and upwards.
Yeah, we just didn't finish the chances that we had. We created so many chances today, which is very impressive against a side that's coming off of, what, 4 or 5 wins. To create that many chances, they look completely rattled, Villa. So I think I was very, very impressed with our offensive play today.
I think we played well today. But I am disappointed. I thought that defending in the last 10 minutes was shocking. It's Keystone Cops, under-11s defending. They just couldn't clear it. It was really bad. It was really bad. We were the much better side today.
No, I'm not frustrated at all. We played well today. We missed so many chances, really. Sade, open goal. Tony, overhead kick. I was up. I was celebrating already when he was winding that up. But we played really well. After the game against Wolves last week, where we were downright awful, I think today was a welcome improvement. And bring on Chelsea, I say. Bring on Chelsea. Another repeat of last year would be amazing.
Every second of it, mate. Oh, the goal. Oh, there's Brian over there cutting in, scoring. Yeah, we had it all in control. We had the better chances in the first half. They had one shot on goal, tame header from Thiago Silva, and that was really it. We were in control. Second half, Bosch came out, two goals scored, win the game.
Comfortable again. Easiest place to come in the league, Stamford Bridge. So solid defensively. Can't think of a mistake we made at the back. Me, Pinner,
me.
All the defence outstanding, and then to have the pace like Brian, Sharda to come on, kill the game off the way, Brian. They're so pleased with Brian. worked so hard, and that's what he's capable of.
After last season, I didn't think it could get any better, but this is unbelievable today. We did a great job. It wasn't the best of games all the way through, but, I mean, when Brian scored that goal at the end, unbelievable. We went mental. I mean, they get battered everywhere they go. That's the rumour.
To think that we could come here and do a team like Chelsea, 2-0. Yeah, easy.
We love coming here. Yeah. We love coming here. It's just wonderful. It's living the dream. I can't believe how far we've come in the last 10 years.
Chelsea were terrible. We played really well. Didn't have many shots on target, but we were the better team. Took the chance. What a great goal by Brian. What a great night. We're never going to beat the 4-1, are we? But this was really good as well.
Feeling very, very good. It's becoming a nice habit coming here and winning, isn't it? It's not our usual positive attacking Brentford that we get from Thomas. I think he came here to do a job. But to be fair, Chelsea were a lot poorer than I expected them. You couldn't make this up. No. Fantastic game. Good to see Ruslev getting minutes. I'd like to see him be a bit more confident.
Yes.
If he had the same confidence as Rico, we'd have two wonderful fullbacks. Rico, what a player. Ben Mee, what a player.
They were such a poor team. Considering the second half, left flank for Chelsea, Mudryk and Chilwell, right flank, Sterling and Reece James. I mean, my God. We shouldn't be able to beat a team like that, but we did, comfortably.
We're fucking dead. We're fucking dead. Let me tell you, it's not a lack of quality. You see our players. You see them in moments. We're very, very good. It's just a lack of passion. I think we have an owner who doesn't really know what he's doing, signing too many players, and it's lack of cohesion. And honestly, our players they've sort of just given up at this point in the season. You know, you guys go up against anyone, any big club, you'll even go to their fucking home grounds, City's grounds, Liverpool grounds, our grounds, and you play with a sack of nuts. You don't play fearless. You know what we play with? Fucking scared. No matter who we play, it's scared. We start the lineup with Sterling as our only attacker. It just pains me. It really does.
UBs?
Huh?
UBs?
Get the fuck out of here.
So there you go, fans. Two different sets of views. One absolutely ecstatic set of views as well, and interesting to hear that Chelsea fan's view, because he just was not happy at all. And all the Chelsea fans that I do, it's really weird, because it's almost like, you know, you've had years of Chelsea fans absolutely poking you in the eye and giving it the large and all this kind of stuff that you've had to put up with, and now that we've done them a kipper a couple of seasons in a row, they're being very kind of like, almost like very nice. Goes, oh, yeah, you deserve to win. Oh, that was quite good, isn't it? So they've sort of kind of taken off that sort of arrogance, as long as like they think, I've got to take me arrogant coat off, you know what I'm saying? And just be completely, and just let Brentford just say what they want to for now, because I could hopefully put my arrogant coat back on in 2 years' time when we'll be back again, like, you know? So it's quite weird, because you know, Chelsea get battered and all these kind of things, and they just go, oh, yes, yeah, we did, actually, yeah. So it's a little bit frustrating, because you're trying to get in there, but it's all good, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, Lainey, you enjoyed that, didn't you? I'll tell you something, I've got to ask you the question. What did you think when you saw that lineup? Because the lineup was a little bit different. You know, we got, you know, obviously me and Pinnock, big boys in the defence there as well. But we had Zanka in there. Ruslev was brought back in, you know, with Henry. So he got a 3-5 at the back. And then also you had Onyeka in the midfield with Jensen and Yenault as well, with Tony and Visa up front. I mean, what was your thoughts?
Yeah, big game Mads. Back in the starting lineup, and Zanka, yeah. I mean, going five at the back, it was clear that, you know, we were going to set up a wall there, and you know, the outlet was obviously going to be Henry bombing forward, and to a lesser extent, Ruslev. But we had a lot of strength there. I thought Yanel had a great game in the middle. I thought Frank, I think there's still room for improvement with Frank Onyeka. I don't think we've seen the best of him by a long stretch, but I thought he was a bit of a rock there. I think he grew into the game. Tony and Wiesa, they didn't really get a lot, didn't get much of a sniff during the game. They were kind of not marked out of it, but that really, you know, we were on the back foot. But I have to say, you know, Zanka, just he doesn't I don't know, he's almost like the forgotten player, isn't he? And you know, he's always done such a decent job for us. And you know, and the same with Mads Roslev. I think, you know, the pair of those two are kind of unsung heroes. They really don't let us down. And you know, especially Roslev, you know, he's been part of every great result we've had this season, and obviously, you know, last season as well, and getting to the Premier League in the playoff final against Swansea. You know, that run he did, and you know, I just think we kind of always looking past him, and I just think, you know, and it's not really to knock Hickey, and I know Hickey's been linked with a couple of really Man United and Man City apparently looking at him, so you know, watch this space about him, his future. But you know, I just think we always look past Roslev and past Sanka, and they both do such a great job for us. But player of the match last night was Pinnock. He was just excellent, and you know, he rightly got the man of the match. But yeah, walking into the ground, seeing the starting lineup, I thought it was a weakened Brentford. I have to admit, I did expect to see Brian and Bumo and Shah to start. I thought we'd ask a lot more questions from the off, because Chelsea are a kind of stunned animal at the moment, stunned big game. But we got the tactics right. Thomas got the tactics right. We got the substitutions right at the right times, and it worked out absolutely bang on, Bill.
Right, and he likes to. Thomas. We talk about this quite a lot. I mean, Thomas Frank, obviously, he studies, and our team study every single team. I'm sure every team does it, but we've obviously got our way about doing it. And knowing what our strengths are, they feel very comfortable in playing particular ways against certain teams. And I have to admit, I mean, I was sort of sitting there, you know, we were at the top, so you could sort of see it, you know, better view when you're at the top, you can see what's going on. And for Brentford, you know, if you look at the game in sort of four quarters, we were almost like quite happy to give Chelsea the ball, you know, up to the second, you know, the second. So as long as it wasn't in our final quarter, you know, there's 2 halves in our half on the pitch, okay, where we're defending, okay. So we were happy for them to have the ball in the second half, you know, so it's like the second quarter of the pitch, you know, so up to the halfway line. As soon as it came into the quarter where you're coming into the 18, that's when we started to press them. But we were quite happy that them doing whatever they're doing around there, you know, take a shot from 35 yards, 30 yards, you know, they were quite happy with us doing that, And it's almost like we were so comfortable in defending and letting them sort of kind of come in and come to us. Because I think that obviously, you know, our tactic was to take the ball, rob them, and then hit them on the break, because we are so fast on the break. I mean, if you look at the stats, stats side of it as well, our XG was 0.87, you know, as opposed to Chelsea's, which was 1.34. So Chelsea, in principle, created more bigger chance opportunities. But then saying that, their one big opportunity came from, was it Aubameyang, who had that chance, was it in the second, was it the second half? Or yeah, that chance.
Yeah, second half,
okay. And that was nearly 1 in 2. So it's nearly 50%, I think it was about 45, 46% of those normally go in the back of the net. And he fluffed it, he missed that, you know. And other than that, I think they had another couple of chances, which were sort of kind of 15, 10, 20%, maybe 20%, 50%. Then they had lots and lots and lots and lots of small chances. So there was that one big chance. And you've got to ask the question, if they got that big chance, how would that have changed and how would it have affected the game? Whereas we actually didn't create that many chances or many good high opportunity chances. And the goal that we actually scored by Brian and Bumo was actually 10%, so one in 10 normally of those go in the back of the net. So it's actually a really well taken goal. But then there's a bit of an anomaly here as well, because we're trying to work out the goal that we actually scored, and because we didn't actually have a shot on goal, the ball was like a cross that got deflected in by their player. It's actually hard to work out, because that wasn't attributed to our chances to an XG, you know. So, you know, in any other time that might have been, you know, another 0.3 or 0.2 or 0.4, so it wasn't. So maybe it's a little bit higher, and it's a little bit kind of all over the, you know, a little bit, it doesn't quite show the full picture. But I think from what I'm saying here is that we obviously set out to keep it tight, you know. As they say, you know, Brentford had one chance on goal and scored 2 goals, so that's super efficient, like, you know. So we're out to keep it tight, hold off Chelsea and then just hit them when we can. And also the interesting thing is that you were saying that Brian Mbeumo, you expected to see him and Sharda start, but they didn't. They put them on the bench, and it's almost like we were there to grind Chelsea down, and then on, 70 minutes or whenever it was, when we brought them on, it's just like, if you were on the pitch there, the last thing you want to see, you've got tired legs, the last thing you want to see is like Brian Mbeumo and Sharda coming on. You're like, oh no, well, Jesus Christ, what's going on here? Like, so it's almost like Thomas, his plan was absolutely perfect. He probably actually planned for us to be nil all up until that point, and then we go, right, then we'll hit him on 70 minutes, but it actually went even better because we got the goal. So I think, Thomas Frank, as we laugh and we joke and say, he knows exactly what he needs. He knew exactly what we needed against Chelsea, and he did it.
Yeah, I mean, he was also listening to the both managers, their post-match comments. It was I thought they were both fascinating, really. I mean, Frank Lampard, the man that you do want to talk about a defeat because he's so well practiced at it. He can pad a defeat out into sounding like a victory. I think he's lost 19 of his last 20 games as a manager now. And he said Brentford do what they do very well. He said that about three times. They do what they do very well, as if that's like it's a real derogatory kind of backhanded, salty compliment. Like, yeah, they're not very good, but they do what they do well. What we attacked clinically and we defended brilliantly. Where's there a negative there? You're up against a team that have spent £500 million in the last transfer window, and they're bringing on almost £200 million worth of substitutes during that game. And you're kind of giving it a bit of a snidey one, like saying, everything's going against us at the moment. The team are down on their confidence, and there's enough experience in that Chelsea team to give us more than a good game. They did give us a good game, but we did more than doing what we do well. Thomas Frank out tacticked him and out coached him, and that's what I don't understand about the Lampard myth. I mean, I think he's a nice guy and whatever, but he seems to be given these opportunities on a plate, and he hasn't earned them. And where Thomas Frank, he continues to do his quiet, brilliant work, doesn't jump up and down. He practices what he preaches. He doesn't get high when we win, and he doesn't get too low when we lose. It's a cliche, but I thought he was quite wise as well in that. I said the same after the game, and so I was interested to hear him mention that the chances and the play that we did at, up at Wolves ended in a 2-0 defeat. It wasn't massively dissimilar to last night. Whereas, he said up at Wolves, two deflections went against us and two deflections went for us last night. And the contrast in how you feel after both of those games could not be more marked, because, after the Wolves, the Molineux defeat, it seemed like, the wheels were coming off and our season was going to, deteriorate. And now, we're on a massive high 24 hours later on, and we'll probably get mileage out of this for 3 or 4 years. So, but he was right to compare the two performances. But, looking at the numbers, Bill, we actually created more at Molineux, but got nothing.
Yeah, and again, talking about this, that was another interesting point as well, because, again, it just goes to show you, and I know a lot of people say, you've got to put the ball in the back of the net, which is completely and utterly true. I mean, at Wolves, we went, and you discussed this at the Wolves game, Laney, where you were saying, a lot of people are saying, what are you talking about, when we said that we were actually not that bad, we just didn't score the goals. Thomas Frank said it in his post-match podcast. He said, not podcast, but his interview, said, actually, look, we were a bit unlucky in that game. We worked really hard, we created really well, we just didn't score. And I think because, I don't know whether or not it's because it was Wolves, because we're just not happy going to Wolves, or whether or not it's just the fact that Wolves were, they were quite terrier-like in the way that they played. I don't know what it was, but we just felt that we weren't really at the races in Wolves. But then when we looked at the stats, we thought, actually, we created quite a lot against Wolves. We just didn't put them in the back of the net, and we created far more against Wolves from that statistical level than we did against Chelsea. But the difference is that Chelsea, you know, we put the ball in the back. Well, they put the ball in the back of the net in the first half, and we put the ball in the back of the net in the second half in a chance which was even probably more difficult than Sharda's miss against Villa the other day, which we didn't score. So again, it's football is a game of chances. I know that's a cliched thing to say, and you can't really you can't read anything into what the score is, or there's just so many factors that are involved, and sometimes it goes for you and sometimes it didn't go for you. And there's an argument to say that it went for us in this game. It went for us because I suppose it was a free hit for us. We had nothing to lose. You're at Chelsea. Everything was the whole world was against them. You know, we knew that they weren't very good, that their confidence was down. So all we had to do is just play our game and just keep it tight. And then when the time came to push up Brentford, which pushing up Brentford at the right time actually worked for us this time, whereas it didn't do on Saturday against Aston Villa because they scored against us and that wasn't very funny.
No one ever wants to talk about stats when you lose. I mean, that's a fact, you know, and I do understand that. And, you know, I think, you know, we're all on a bit of a journey. But I think, you know, the one thing I can say is, you know, you shouldn't ever write this team off. You shouldn't do that. You can't, you know, that they dug really deep for the badge last night. And, you know, they will continue pushing till the end of the season. They've proved that. They're not on the beach. They just don't get it right every week, and you can't expect to get it right every week at this level. And, you know, we've had an incredible season, you know. I'm expecting more of the same. It's going to be a really, really big game. Forest coming to our place at the weekend, so, you know, the thrills and spills continue, mate.
Yes, indeed. So, thrills and spills. I mean, Chelsea, just quickly coming back to this game again, let's just have a look at what else we can do stats-wise as well. Okay, so, you know, according to that game, on the match up front, Chelsea, their strengths, their team had no significant strengths on the day against the Bees, actually. Their weaknesses, they were poor at finishing and also committed a high number of individual errors. They had a large quantity of possession in their opponent's half, which is Brentford's half. They attacked down the right-hand side, dominated possession, and they favoured short passing. As for Brentford, we created a high number of chances relative to our possession. We also were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from counter-attacks, and we were strong at finishing. But we lost possession often, and we also gave away a lot of free kicks around the box. We played with width, attacked down on left-hand side, and we like our long balls. I mean, looking at the players who are top according to who scored as well was obviously Jan Elt, who I thought was fabulous as well. So he was top of the pile, 7.5. David Raya, 7.4. Because actually, to be fair as well, you've got to say David Raya, particularly in the first half, he pulled off a couple of saves, or he did his goalkeeping duties, which you can also argue to say that he kept us in the game. I mean, not necessarily saying that he flew across the goal and performed a marvellous save, but there was a couple of saves that he made which, if they'd gone in, the game could have gone differently as well, didn't it, Laney?
Yeah, he looked like a real authoritative goalkeeper. You know, I do, you know, it's not a criticism at all, but he's not the tallest, and we said that and we all know that, but he does, his positional sense, he's got so much better. He is the real deal. And, you know, I heard people talking about the Man City goalie being the best in the world with the ball at his feet. Raya can't be far behind him. You know, he actually came out past the halfway line to take a free kick yesterday as well, didn't he? So we don't even, you know, we just know that his distribution and his delivery is perfect, and he handled everything Chelsea threw at him. And I know the Aubameyang header that just went over and landed on the top of the net, that was close, but he actually came out and I think he got a hand or at least put the forward off. So take a bow, David Raya as well.
Yes, right. And look, as it is, so Yenot, Raya, and then even Pinnock, and then after that was Conte as well. He didn't play. I don't think he played in the game last season because I think he was injured, wasn't he? If I remember right, I can't 100% remember, but I thought that he played at the game at their Arp ground last year, but I'm not sure if he was available for the game at their place. Anyway, it's interesting to see him back and in the four as well. And then Brian Mbeumo, interestingly, was like, according to Who Scored, was the fifth best player at 7.1, which is interesting because he only played, you know, he came on as a substitute. So to actually kind of get yourselves right up in there after coming on the sub goes to show you what a contribution you made to the game. Interestingly, you know, the shots on goal as well. Aubameyang, okay, Silva, Kante, Sterling, and then fifth and nine was Brian Mbeumo. So Chelsea actually had a lot of shots. Again, I'd say to you, a lot of them were kind of more outside the area, smaller chances that they had, which obviously Brentford were probably quite comfortable in them doing that as well, which is all good. Just coming back to quickly that point, we were talking about the Wolves game. The Wolves game, was just pulled it up here. The RXG was 1.5, including that massive De Silva chance, which he could have scored, which is, I think it was about 80% actually, or 78% or something like that, where De Silva should have scored in the 6-yard box, and he didn't do in Wolves. So 1.5, don't forget we lost to them, I think it was 2-0, wasn't it? They were 1.02, we were 1.5, and then against Chelsea, she was 0.87, whereas Chelsea was 1.34. So we created more at Wolves than Chelsea created against us, and much more than we created against Chelsea. And just to show you, the results are about scoring the goals, and we scored a great goal, and Chelsea scored a great goal for us as well yesterday. Thank you very much, Chelsea. Just quickly going back to the fans there as well. Make sure you go to prideofwest.london and listen to the full fan clip piece about the fans after the game in the Chelsea, because it's definitely worth listening to. You've got the chanting in the ground at the beginning of the section where the Brentford fans are singing Chelsea get battered everywhere they go, which is kind of one of those things which you think, how weird is this? Like, you know, we're in Chelsea and we're singing about how Chelsea get battered in effect by Brentford, you know, everywhere they go. Last year obviously we beat them 4-1, and I completely forgot until something came up on my timeline that we did sing the same song to them, except for we changed the words again. Do you remember what the words were last year, Laney, for that?
No, I don't.
Chelsea get sanctioned everywhere they go.
That's right.
Chelsea get sanctioned everywhere they go. And Chelsea got sanctioned after the Ukrainian war, obviously, because they had a Russian owner at the time who's not their owner anymore. So they got sanctioned where they weren't allowed to do any transfers a year ago. So it goes to show you that, you know, that, maybe we might have to think of some new words for the same song next year when we go down there, lady. We've got a year to think about it, don't we?
I'll tell you what I did love, though. Obviously, the atmosphere, it grew and grew towards the final whistle. Once we realised that the game was won, and but the game went end to end for that last 10 minutes, and we weren't sitting back trying to defend the two goals. I mean, Chelsea obviously were going to come at us, but we was break after break after break. It was Sharda, and then it was Mbeumo, and then, you know, honestly, it was an excellent kind of just a classic end-to-ender. And I would have gladly watched another 10-15 minutes of that, but it's better to get the whistle, get the 3 points, and then skip back to the pub.
Yeah, that was actually the best. That was the best part of the game. I mean, that was the best part of the game, but that kind of reminded me of, you know, Brentford. That was very Brentford. That was, it's almost like beforehand we're not saying we've been conservative, but we're doing what we had to do. Then all of a sudden, it's like when you tell people about Brentford and the football that we play, you know, that just kind of like just reminded me of that whole Brentford where it was a little bit, I want to say gung-ho, but it's one of the scenarios where you think, oh yeah, we could score, but then obviously we might be able to let in a goal, and, you know, and that was good. And I think we could enjoy that a lot more because we were winning. We were winning by two goals at that stage, you know what I'm saying? So, Ben Mee.
Well, how about that little... I was going to say, Bill, what other highlights from the game? So, you, Ben Mee, that little pirouette.
The turn, yeah.
Yeah, that was brilliant. I love the Rico Henry and Wesley Fofana little clash. Not necessarily the clash itself, but the way Rico Henry kind of reeled him in, or almost caught up and overtook him. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that's right. And like I said to you, loads of chance there on the terraces. We want you to stay, Frank Lampard. We want you to stay. Like, you know, there's quite a lot of a tongue-in-cheek going on as well. You know, obviously, sort of kind of the worst support we've ever seen, sort of singing to the Chelsea fans who are just standing there in silence, like, you know. And for me, again, you know, as a Brentford fan, you know, it must be really embarrassing because Chelsea were like, I mean, they were top of the pile, Chelsea are. And to have Brentford come and just kind of just basically kind of both on and off the pitch, take the piss out of you like that is, It's just quite bad, actually. I mean, the singing, the support was actually really good, and we did have a lot of fun. I mean, you know, the jeopardy wasn't quite there for us, so I suppose we could have a lot of fun, couldn't we?
Yeah, I do love the baiting of Mikhailo Mudrik as well. You know, should have come to a big club, and I thought he was awful. He has been awful since he's arrived there. I don't know if you saw it as well. Ivan Toney almost got his toe on the end of Arrizabalaga kind of clearance. He got the ball back in the goal, and then tried to spread it out to the left to Chalabar, and Toney almost got his toe on it. And as Toney got up, he walked past the goalie, and he patted him, or he had a laugh with him, because he knew it was like millimeters away. He probably felt it at the end of his toe, but the three would have been just incredible. That really would have taken the piss taking into off the scale territory, I think.
And also, I mean, remember there's that moment when all of a sudden, like, I mean, you've got Ivan Toney in your side, and then we decided to substitute him at Chelsea. I mean, that was quite a bizarre moment, wasn't it? We're like, Tony's coming off, because we were thinking, Shardy going to come on? Who's he going to come on for, though? And, oh, no, he's coming off for Ivan Toney. I mean, that is a disrespect, you know, to Chelsea. You know, it's all right, we don't need our top striker. You know, he scored 20-odd goals, but we don't need him anymore, because we'll just bring somebody else on.
I think we're going to see a lot more of that. I mentioned it in the post-match, and I think I've probably mentioned it a couple of weeks back as well. But I think, you know, clearly Sharda has been brought in to be a potential replacement for Toney at number nine. I know we're not going to use Sharda, but his first touch when he came on was to win that header, a flicked-on header. So he needs to get, you know, a little bit more confident, I would say. It's an interesting situation to see how the Sharda Toney kind of transfer may happen if Toney is tempted off to pastures new in the summer. Then I think that's the way the club are going to go.
Yeah. So anyway, listen, we're going to go off. We're going to have another little break. We're going to come back and actually tell you what we're going to do. When we come back, we're going to find out what JB has got to say, because JB's always got a lot of facts and funk.
I bet he's proper funky today.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Winning at Stamford Bridge in two successive seasons is something no Brentford fan has ever seen before Wednesday night. We met Chelsea in our original five top-tier seasons, plus our two in the Premier League. We have now scored in all seven of our league visits to Stamford Bridge, but Wednesday's was the first time we'd kept a clean sheet. And on that subject, it was the 10th Premier League clean sheet of the season, with David Raya not beaten by Southampton, Bournemouth, nor Chelsea in either game against them. The 10 is one more than we achieved last season. Back in 1986, exactly 37 years to the day before the Chelsea game, we drew 3-3 with York City at Griffin Park in front of a crowd of 2,864, our sixth lowest home crowd since joining the Football League, excluding Covid restrictions. Fast forward to 2023, and the game at Chelsea saw the attendances at our Premier League matches this season and last past the 2 million mark.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Plus the many, many more watching on TV or the internet. In our game on Saturday, our goal against Villa in match 32 was our 48th of the season. That's the same number as we scored in all 38 Premier League games last season, but 6 games earlier. And although we were disappointed with the draw on Saturday, Villa failed to complete the double over us, which means Newcastle are the only club this season where we failed to take a point. There were 4 doubles over us last season, none in the promotion season, and in Thomas Frank's first full season, just 1. Nottingham Forest.
So there you go, there's JB with some facts and some funk. Croaky JB as well, because I think that he was probably singing one or two cheeky little songs at Stamford Bridge. I can imagine he was probably, Laney, I'm not 100% sure, but I think he might have been singing Chelsea Get Battered Everywhere We Go. Chelsea.
I think he started it. I saw him at the back. He started it.
So JB there with some facts and some funk as we look ahead to the match against Forest. Nottingham Forest, we're playing them at the weekend. And Nottingham Forest, interestingly, they've come down from the Championship, or come up from the Championship, on a bit of a riser. And lots of happiness and anticipation for their Premier League season from the Forest fans. Their owner went out and spent a lot of money. It's not unknown that he spent a lot of money, but spent a lot of money, and they bought in a lot of players, and they brought in our friend Steve Cooper from Swansea to come in and guide them. He actually guided them to the Premier League, and then he's guided them this season. And as you know, people out there who may or may not know, Steve Cooper and Brentford, we don't quite get on for various reasons, is it, Laney?
No, he's been very salty in the past, and there is beef there, and obviously us pipping Swansea to the Premier League a couple of seasons back was kind of a game, set, and match really for us.
But do you remember how it started though? Do you remember that game, the semi-final game?
Yeah, I mean,
with the Rico.
The Rico sent the sending off that never was the season before. But all season I've been looking for Forest to lose, and it was a shame that we conceded that very, very late goal at the City Ground, where we'd gone 1-0 behind, and we flipped it. We had that lovely Wiese goal that he chipped the goalkeeper, and we thought that we would hang on. I mean, they threw the kitchen sink at us, I'm not going to lie, Bill, and it's all about Leeds going down as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I won't hide the fact that I want Leeds out of this Premier League. They're rubbish. And doesn't it show you how rubbish you have to be to get relegated? There's a good chance that Leeds will escape, but they've been shit, and I've been enjoying their demise for the last couple of years, and we should have sent them down last year, but there you go.
Again, it's not, and it's not necessarily about the on pitch stuff with Leeds either as well. I mean, with Forest, as you know, I've always wanted Forest to stay up, because I like going to Forest. I've got a lot of Forest chums out there. I think it's a right laugh going to Forest. It's a great stadium, a great atmosphere, staying out there is really good. They're in the predicament. I thought that Forest would actually get out of the situation that they're in, it's with their players, with the games, and they looked like they were going to get out of it at some stage, but they've pulled themselves right back into it recently, where they literally haven't been able to buy a win. And for us, again, same for me, it's really disappointing, because Leeds United is the team, obviously, that every single Brentford fan wants to go down. If you had to give between Forest and Leeds to go down, if you had to have one or the other, I could say that 99.3% of Brentford fans would say they wanted Leeds to go down. Not because of the football as well, but just because of the lack of respect, the disrespect they've given us over the past few years, and especially the last couple of years as well. So it's quite nice to see the shoe on the other foot, where we're going beating Chelsea up in their ground, and we're up where we are, and Leeds are doing what they are, because apparently we don't deserve to be in the Premier League, according to these posh Leeds boys up there who do their podcasts up there and say their thing. But hey, listen, they're entitled to their opinion, and we're entitled to our opinion as well. So let's see how this season pans out. However, Laney, we do have a bit of a predicament, because obviously we are playing Forest on Saturday, and we would love to get all 3 points in any game. to be quite honest with you, you know, all 3 points in any game. But I'm going to say to you is that I'm going to throw you a really there's pretty of a predicament here, Laney. If we played Forest on Saturday, we were going to play Forest on Saturday, and if there was some sort of wizard out there that said to you, okay, Laney, if your team Brentford lost to Forest, then Leeds would automatically 100% be relegated. Would you take that?
Yes. So would I actually. They're living rent free in our head, remember? So is that the expression?
I think that's the expression. But I think again, quite a few Brentford fans. If you were just given two choices, and listen, this is just hypothetical. We're not saying it's going to happen, but if you had you only had two choices, you can't say, "Oh yeah, we're going to do this." It's just like there's two choices. You either win this game and everything just carries on, or if we lost against Forest and Leeds were then relegated, okay, what would you take?
Yeah. Can we frame it slightly differently? I think we could frame it like, if Brentford have to lose one game between now and the end of the season, which game would you rather them lose? And I'd say Forest, and then we win the rest, because that would be sufficient, would it? Would it not?
you could do that as well. I think that's okay. I think that's. Probably
bending the rules. I know that wasn't the original question. It makes that way makes me feel less guilty.
Yeah. So it's all your fault, Laney. Yeah, if he loses Saturday, so which is all good. But listen, you know, tell you something though. Look, we are chatting away ourselves, and we're trying to sort of kind of like talk ourselves into knowing what's going on in Forest, but we've got no idea what's happening in Forest. What we're going to do? We're going to go over to the land of the Forest. The tricky trees, as they call them, and we're going to speak to Scott, because Scott knows everything that's going down at Forest.
Hi, Billy. It's Scott Ealy, avid Nottingham Forest supporter, part-time football writer. Looking forward to Saturday's game and reviving somewhat of a decent rivalry between Brentford and Forest. So, what am I thinking about? The season so far, it's definitely been a roller coaster, that's for sure. Obviously had the highs of getting promoted for the first time in 20 odd years, but then it was fairly kind of having to dismantle that squad, losing those loan players, and it's been a tough job for Steve Cooper just to kind of get so many players gelled and being cohesive. But, you know, despite kind of recent disappointments, if you'd said to me at the start of the season, would Forest still be in a chance of surviving in the Premier League with 5 games to go, then we would have snapped your hand off. So, you know, there's still plenty for us to play for. We've had a recent pick-up in the last week with a big win against Brighton. But since the last time we played you, I think it was back in October time, we definitely steadied the ship for a good part before the World Cup, and had a little bit of a blip in early January, but we put together some good performances and we're looking really strong. So injuries have certainly gone against us, and more additions in January have not helped, and it's almost left us kind of trying to forge an identity once more. You know, it took us a time to get settled into the Premier League and get accustomed to the level. And it definitely took a couple of months to get that Steve Cooper side back. And just as things were being settled and getting that identity again, we had some key injuries in January, which again, you know, just coming back to those additions, just upskittled everything and almost started from scratch once more. In terms of Steve Cooper, what would I give him out of 10? For the job that he's done so far this season, I think it's fair to say it's a 6 at the moment. I think it was absolutely the right thing to keep him, and it's been quite refreshing from the owner, to be honest, that he's persevered. There's been a couple of times where it felt like he might be going, but yeah, considering the Greek owner, Evangelos Marinakis, is certainly been a bit trigger happy, you know, in the past, and Olympiakos also. It's been good that he's kind of stuck with Steve Cooper. you know, it's with the brand new team and so many players, it's, you know, that inevitably is going to take time. The problem that we have in the Premier League is it's very unforgiving. So it's pretty much been, you know, it's not far off an impossible job to replace the vast majority of that, you know, that squad last season. But our away form has been, you know, has been dreadful, to be honest. And a lot of that has come down to the manager. And sadly, he's not been able to solve that problem. Yes, we've had some injuries, but there's been some really bad, shocking individual errors, especially away from home, that have cost us points. And it's a bit of a funny one, really, how we can't adjust away from home, because when we're at the City Ground, we pretty much play like the away team. We let the opposition have plenty of the ball, and we try to hit them on the break. So, it's a bit of a funny one how we can't replicate that away from home. I think there's been a degree of being starstruck, you know, being the Premier League. It's a new thing for a lot of the players. We don't have that much experience in the team, and some of the experienced players coming from abroad have not played in the Premier League before. So I think being starstruck has certainly caught us out, particularly at the bigger clubs where we've, you know, had some real hide-ins. So I think it's building that belief. It's been a big learning curve this season. But the time is to kind of, you know, take stock of what we've learned from those mistakes, and they've really got to apply ourselves in these last five games to try and keep us in the Premier League. That being said, if Steve Cooper keeps us up, then I think you'd have to give him an 8 or a 9 out of 10, considering the challenge of so many new players in so little time, given that, you know, we're in the playoffs, which et into pre-season preparation. So if he keeps us up, then he's done an absolutely fantastic job as Cooper. In terms of the players that we've brought in, we've brought in 30 players. To be honest, the majority have turned out to be fairly decent, I think. You know, it's hard to judge everyone, as the, you know, they only joined in the summer and there's still plenty of time to grow. And there's been some players that, you know, you think about Emmanuel Dennis, who had a pretty good season with Watford in front of goal, and, you know, he's been disappointing. But there's still flashes that, you know, there's room for him to grow a little bit further. It's concerning that we're now into our third recruitment person since this time last year. It's definitely been a mixed bag in terms of the signings, but I think particularly the ones that were made in the summer, we've signed some good young players on relatively low kind of Premier League fees and wages that have got plenty of time to come good. And I think that's whether we're in the Premier League or whether, you know, we're in the Championship. I'm still hopeful that we keep hold of some of the younger players. I suppose the disappointing thing is probably been some of the more experienced signings that we've brought in. I think particularly in January, that really upskilled things with the arrival of Chris Wood and John Joe Shelby from Newcastle. Both players that don't really fit into the Forest style of play. Playing up to a big man is not how Steve Cooper's played since he came at Forest. It's been fairly fluid moving forwards. So Chris Wood, you know, was hoping would be a different dynamic, but it really wasn't working. But he's out for the season now, so in some respects we can go back to the way that we're suited and accustomed to playing. And John Joe Shelby has probably been the biggest disappointment of the lot, to be honest. When he was coming into the team, he was, you know, I think really looking to take the team by the scruff of the neck, but he was then starting to bypass the midfield and just looking for the Hollywood pass every time he got the ball. And he's not been great, and there's been some errors as well from his part. And you know, when you're looking at signing that type of experienced Premier League player, when they're making mistakes like he has, it's been disappointing. And it looks like there's been issues off the pitch. He wasn't happy but being left out of the squad to go to Anfield, and it looks like he's having time out of training at the moment. So it's definitely not a time for big time Charlies. Speaking of which, you know, Jesse Lingard had that reputation of being kind of more interested in stuff off the pitch rather than on it. It's been a bit of a shame, really, because Jesse was just starting to come into some form, having kind of not being fit at the start of the season, but the World Cup, kind of disrupted his progress, and then he picked up an injury on Boxing Day against Man United, and he's barely kind of featured since. But he seems to have a good influence off the pitch, particularly with the younger players, and he's always quite visible and vocal on the touchline, particularly at the City Ground. But I think, you know, Forest have got someone like Taiwo Awoniyi, who, you know, he's come from German football, and he's gotten accustomed to playing in the Premier League a little bit more now. So fingers crossed he could be, a good signing, particularly in this running that we could do with him having a big contribution up top. So in terms of who you should be looking out for at Forest, Morgan Gibbs-White is a real talent, and when he's on form, he transforms the way Forest play. Sadly, away from home, his form has been disappointing, but a goal and an assist at Anfield last weekend will hopefully have done his confidence the world of good. It's coming, you know, it's massive games now, and it really is showtime for Morgan. You know, he's a record signing, so he's got to turn those home performances into more effective ones away from the City Ground that, you know, we need to pick up. I think at least 6 or 7 points from these remaining 5 games to stay up. Danilo is another one to watch out for. He came over from Palmeiras in Brazil in January with really good pedigree. We've had to be patient with him. He's obviously come to, you know, a new country, getting adapted to the style and the pace. So it's taken him a bit of time, and he's not featured as much as we would have liked. But he's getting a good run now and really starting to look, a good player. He's got bundles of energy. He likes to break play up, but has got that Brazilian flair moving forwards and technically very good. He scored his first goal in the week against Brighton. So we're kind of hopeful that there'll be one or two more before the season's out. In terms of relegation, does it worry me? Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been out of the Premier League for 20 odd years. And you just don't want to go down with a whimper. So it was looking good in January, and then we've just had a really poor run of results. But the 3-2 defeat at Anfield looks to have kind of given us a positive to build from. We got to score 2 goals away from home, and obviously going to Anfield and putting in a really good performance has kind of led on to that momentum, taking it into the Brighton game where, you know, we played really well and everybody was working really hard and we scored a couple of good goals. So we've just got to see, you know, hopefully we can get something at your place on Saturday. And then we've got Southampton coming up, you know, which is going to a really big home game. So fingers crossed we can pick up 4 points in the next couple of matches. In terms of who do I think will go down? Funnily enough, I was in Belfast a few weeks ago, and a little bit superstitious, but a few things caught my eye that determined who I think will go down. We were at the Titanic Museum, and obviously that was the ship that went down after leaving Southampton, so I think they're kind of fairly doomed. Interestingly, there was both Everton and Leeds United club shops in Belfast city centre that were now empty with whitewashed windows. So I'm hoping that's going to be a sign that they'll be going down as well. So I'm fairly optimistic that they'll be the 3 to go. Thinking about the game earlier in the season, I thought we started really well in that one, and Morgan Gibbs-White scored a cracking goal. There was definitely a contentious VAR decision, where Dean Henderson was done for. Well, tripping him, I can't remember the striker's name, but tripping the striker over, but it looked like he got a hand on the ball. VAR seemed to take an age, and then they eventually bottled it after not making a decision and put it back in the ref's court. So to wait kind of, I don't know, it must have been 5 or 6 minutes for that decision. It was really frustrating that we conceded, and then you guys went 2-1 in front. But it was great that we got a last-minute equaliser. And fingers crossed that could be a really big point, you know, at the end of the season. I think in the Premier League particularly, if you can get a last minute equaliser, it feels sometimes as good as a win. So fingers crossed it'll be a big point. And we'll see at the end of the season. Brentford, the players that impressed me, Mbueno, if I think that's the way you pronounce his name, he's made, you know, a great transition into the Premier League, and he seems such a consistent performer. I'm a big fan of Norgaard as well as Pinnock and Henry, who again, you know, those last two have shown that they can kind of make that transition from, you know, the Football League into the Premier League and play well on a consistent basis. But a lot of the time, you know, you're not about, you know, big names in particular, I don't think. I mean, obviously, Tony really the go-to man for the headlines with the goals, but you're just a well-oiled machine, and you have been for a long time. So I think it doesn't matter in some aspects who comes in to the Brentford team, because you know, you play like a team, you play good football, and it's fairly predictable of how you're going to play, and that will be keeping good possession and trying to get around the opposition. I think in terms of the game on Saturday, it's going to be backs against the wall for Forest, definitely for the 90 minutes. But the good thing is we're beginning to create chances. We can't afford to defend like we did against Liverpool last weekend, but if we can keep that spirit going, particularly after Wednesday's win, then maybe we can cause a surprise. Forest have got plenty of individual talent in the team, but that's where we are at the moment. We've certainly relied on individuals too much over the course of the season. Currently, you know, there's a big reliance on the goalkeeper, Keylor Navas, to pull off some big saves. We've got Luis Felipe at the back, who, you know, he's been brilliant since he came, but he just can't do it all by himself. He needs help in the back four. Morgan Gibbs-White, that I touched on earlier, you know, he can show some individual brilliance. And then Brennan Johnson's been our top goal scorer, but it's not quite come together cohesively across the season in terms of how we want to play. But it's showtime. You know, we've got to pick up results. It's do or die. So let's see if it brings out the best of us. And if anything, we just want Forest to go down fighting, not to go out with a whimper. So I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw, and hopefully, you know, just to stop the rot away from home and take that into the Southampton game, we'll see us pick up some decent points as we try to stay up. So yeah, so thanks very much for having me on. Hope you enjoy the game on Saturday.
So there you go, Nottingham Forest. Bit of a predicament, Forest, but the thing is, listen, the reality is, and we're not sort of saying it, you know, this is like kind of like, it's not rocket science, but, you know, they've got to get themselves out of the predicament. You know, we can, you know, there's only certain much that other teams can help them. But at the end of the day, if teams around them are like losing matches, they kind of need to win and draw a few matches to try and get themselves out of it. And every week I see them thinking, come on, Forest, like there's only a couple of points between you and that gap there. Come on, you can do it. And it just doesn't quite happen, and it's quite frustrating, it has to be said. I mean, looking at Forest, and we're playing them on Saturday, I mean, going to who scored, what their strengths, they say they don't have any significant strengths, okay? Their weaknesses: finishing, scoring chances, keeping possession of the ball, defending set pieces, defending against long shots, defending against skillful players, very weak against fouling in dangerous areas. They favour long balls, attacking down the right, they take long shots, they attempt crosses often, they take a lot of shots, they play in their own half, they're aggressive, and they rotate their first 11. I mean, for Forest, I don't know what to say, Lainey. I mean, you know, the ball is definitely in their court, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the league table shows that they're out of it at the moment. I mean, there's only a point there, and Leeds are out of it. There's a point and goal difference that you know, they've got another 10 goals. But they're better off than Forest. But there are going to be twists and turns. I mean, obviously, clearly, all of those teams at the bottom, they're there because they don't win very much, and they're not really, you know, putting on runs. Bournemouth have pulled away a little bit, but they're not fully out of it. They lost at the weekend, and it looks between Everton, Leicester, and Forest and Leeds. Leicester, yes. Oh, I'll talk to you about that next week as well. I had to explain that to Brentford fans that should know better, actually. But you know, why do you say and Leicester? Anyway, I explained to it. Everyone else should know. Anyway, so Dean Smith's at at and Leicester now. Everton are playing tonight. They've got Newcastle, which is a big ask for them to get any points when you see how great Newcastle were against Tottenham, although Tottenham were awful. Forest at our place, and then Leeds have got a tricky one at the weekend as well. So, you know, it is going to probably go to the wire as it did last year. But, you know, we can't guess, but it's just that I don't think any of those teams are going to pull away to a level that it means that they can really go into the last day not looking over their shoulders.
Because as Forest fans know, we love our stats as well, and we like to get to 538 normally when we're doing okay, or either when we're doing okay or we're doing really badly, just to find out what the score is, but also we like to see how the opposition are doing as well. And 538 is a site that predicts. It's a stats prediction site that is kind of used as a standard. Nate Silver, who runs it as well, who's a bit of a guru in the stats world, he normally does more election stats and stuff like that as well, but also he does a lot of American sports stats, but then he's come into UK soccer and worldwide soccer, and he's done that in there. So what they've done is that they've predicted in their chart exactly where teams are going to finish at the end of the season. And let's just start at the bottom, because we're talking about Nottingham Forest at the moment now. What's their chances of survival? So at the bottom, they've got Southampton, finishing rock bottom with 30 points. Okay, then below them, they've got Everton finishing 19th with 33 points. Then they've got Nottingham Forest finishing third from bottom with 34 points. But this is what I find interesting, because they've actually got Leeds United finishing in fourth from bottom place with 35 points. So there's only 1 point difference there, which means that if Forest actually can pull out a result which is not expected, it's going to just change things massively. Okay, now I know Forest fans will say if, but this is kind of how this game works. Like, you know, 1 point in it. Interestingly, 90% chance of relegation is Southampton, and then 63% chance is Everton, the 58% chance is Nottingham Forest, 45% chance is Leeds, 34% chance is Leicester, then 9% is Bournemouth. So Bournemouth are out of the race as far as they're concerned, unless they have a massive downturn. It's really between Leicester, Leeds and Nottingham Forest and Everton for the last two places, according to stats people. And even if you want to sort of tuck it down a little bit, it's probably between Leeds, Forest and Everton for them last two places as well. Now, interestingly, Leeds United, because you think, oh, well, Leeds United, when you look at them at the beginning of the year, I think the 1st of January, their chances of relegation were actually, I think the chances were, it was 15%. So Leeds were 15% at that stage, which means that you're pretty much, you know, quite out of the picture. And now they're up to 45%, almost going to 50%. So you can see that they're on a massive downward slump. Like, you know, whereas, you know, Nottingham Forest, you know, talking about that, and at the same time, around about that same time, Forest were on 44% in January, you know, and now they're on, you know, 58%. So, okay, they slumped a bit. They're even worse position than they were then. But, you know, if you compare them to Leeds, all they need to do is get a little result out the blue, like they did the other day against, was it Arsenal? They got a result against Arsenal, wasn't it, Laney?
Southampton got a 3-3 draw last weekend against Arsenal on Friday night. Forest beat Brighton last night.
Oh, yeah, that's it, Forest, that was it, Brighton. Okay, and I thought Arsenal, just only because I still think of Brighton as an Arsenal, because they were just so good when we played them. To me, they were like the best team that we played all season, so I sort of see them as like the pinnacle. But then they go down to Forest and Forest beat them out of the blue. That was not an expected result, you know. So if they can pull up another unexpected result, that will change things massively. So and any Forest fans listening to this who used to take the piss out of us being spreadsheet winkers, as we call ourselves, listen, this is what we do. Just looking at the top end, Laney,
can I ask you a question, Bill?
yes you can.
According to your stats there, yeah. We're only 6 points behind Tottenham at the moment, and I'm thinking, is there any chance, according to those stats, that we finish the second highest team in London? So Arsenal are going to be above us, and then can we overtake Tottenham? What do they predict?
Okay, well, according to the stats people, they're saying absolutely no chance whatsoever. The stats people have got us finishing, not saying they're right, wrong, because we can just go on a run and win every single game, and that's what this is all about. You know, they can't predict all of a sudden Sharda, you know, all of a sudden having some sort of kind of like mind-bending sort of kind of positivity thing going on, and him going out out there and doing things that people don't ever expect him to. So if we won all our games, of course, yeah, then that's a different scenario altogether. But at the moment, the expectation is that we're currently on 47 points, we're going to finish in ninth spot with 53 points, which is actually not that many more points than we got now. So there's not much expectation for us. So I'm kind of getting points from our next, was it five games or so? Yeah. You know, because we've got Liverpool, we've got Tottenham, we've got, you know, Man City. So, you know, there's things like that. They obviously think that Man City are going to beat us, probably Tottenham going to beat us, Liverpool probably get a point from them. So they're not expecting us to get that many points over the next few games, interestingly. So they've got Aston Villa finishing above us in eighth place with 60 points, which is a massive 7 points above us. So there's a massive gap between us and Villa, they reckon. And then Tottenham finishing in sixth place on 61 points. Brighton on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, Brighton in sixth place and 62 points. Tottenham in seventh place and 61. Villa in eighth place with 60. And us in ninth place on 53 is prediction. Above Fulham and 51 points. And Chelsea on 47 is their predicted points total for the end of the, to the end of the season, which is quite interesting. They're obviously going to have to go on a proper about turn to try and get themselves to the top of the West London Mini League. But yeah, so that's kind of where it is for us. So we are mid-table, you know, or top 10, you know, just kind of sneaking in the top 10 fodder, which is not bad for our first division, is it, Laney?
No, it's fantastic. It really is fantastic. And you know, I'm looking forward to the remaining games. I think the result last night at Chelsea has been a shot in the arm for everyone. And instead of kind of like, you know, thinking it may just like peter out with maybe one or two more wins, I think we could be expecting just for a little bit more. And when we saw the fixtures for the final month, when the fixture list came out, we were going, oh my God, if we haven't got 40 points by, you know, well, we haven't got 37, 38 points by then or more, we're doomed. But you know, it just shows you that we've blown all expectations out of the water. We're sat here with 47 points and we're actually looking forward to the final month. You know, it's to see the season out with pitted against some of the best teams in the division is mouth-watering.
Yeah, indeed. So listen, Laney, we've got Forest coming down on Saturday. Had a great result against Chelsea, played very well against Villa. Previous few games, probably we won't want to really write home against them. I want to ask you, what is your score prediction for the match on? Oh, tell us something before we talk about this. Talk about score predictions. Can you believe? I mean, obviously, people that listen to the podcast, they're laughing. They're laughing away. So there you go. Every week, I've just decided from the start of the season, I predicted 2-0 to the Bees. 2-0 to the Bees, and I've never got it right. And every single week, I've gone in just to try and make sure I can nab that 2-0 win for the Brentford. And then what happens? We decide not to do a podcast before Chelsea. We beat Chelsea 2-0 and I have not got a prediction in my bag. So I'm really unhappy, actually, that my 2-0 didn't come in, even though you know, Laney, you know I would have gone for a 2-0 against Chelsea, don't you?
Nope.
It's a typical, typical West London cheat, aren't you? Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Cheat, yeah. So anyway, so listen, I'm going to ask you what your podcast prediction is for the Forest game, Laney.
Confident and relaxed Brentford 3, stressed and nervous Forest 1.
Okay, 3-1 to the mighty, mighty Bees. And I'm thinking to myself, tell you something, should I do it? Should I do it to myself, Laney? You know it's not going to happen.
Go on, do it.
So I'm going to go Brentford 2, Forest 0. Hoping that horse comes in once again, because obviously I missed going to the betting shop on Saturday to put my money on the horse that came in anyway. So I'm going to go for it, Brentford 2, Forest 0. So anyway, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. I'll tell you something. I want to say thank you to all the people that bought us a beer. We went on there for the Ko-fi. Haven't been on there for a while because we're so mad busy, and we just give some thumbs up, and we've gone back about a year giving some thumbs up to people to say thank you very much for buying us a beer. We'll also start to give you some mentions, but if we gave you all mentions for the amount of people that bought us a beer, basically that's a podcast in its own. So what we might have to do is we might have to sort of think of some stories and some jokes and everything like that for yourself, which is all good. But thank you very much.
I don't think it means people should go, oh, they don't need to be bought a beer. I mean, if people do enjoy the podcast, it's you know, and you haven't bought us a beer for a while, then you know, it will be gladly drunk. You know that.
Yeah, which is
it'll be thoroughly enjoyed.
We thoroughly enjoyed being at the podcast and having a few beers last night. Like I said, we had a few podcast characters come and brought us a few beers yesterday. It was really good hanging out with the USA Bees the last few days as well. You know, we've got Katie's one. She's gone back to Atlanta today, but she had a right laugh there at Chelsea yesterday as well. Steve, the Baltimore Bee, was in the house as well. He's going to be there again on Saturday. He was absolutely he was tucking right in really early yesterday as well. He's absolutely potty for it. There's America Bees coming out from all over the place, which I said we'll be talking about them next week on next week's podcast. I mean, like I said, they're not the only bees, because we've also got the original bees, the bees that come from, you know, from Slough and from, you know, Hounslow and from Feltham, and all the original bees, they're all in the house there as well. So we're not picking out on any other person because they're because they're special bees. We're just sort of just talking to people that have come up to us and chat to us. Also want to say thank you to everybody that comes up to us and thanks us for doing the podcast. It's really nice because, again, we're sitting in here in our studio, aka our kitchens or our houses or the pub or wherever we may be, and we've got no idea who is out there checking out the podcast. So it's really, really good to see who is listening, and people, like I said to you, that we've never met or seen before, who come up to us and say thank you very much and shake our hands and stuff like that. We really appreciate you and your support that you're giving, so thank you very much, and we'll try and keep them coming as much as we can do. But like I said to you, this is Besotted Pride of West London podcast. My name is Billy Grant and I've got Lainey in the place.
Good afternoon
to you too. You could check us out after the Forest game as well. Our podcasts go back up immediately after the match. Now, we had a bit of a glitch with our new service provider now, but now they go up immediately after the game. So as you know, the Chelsea podcast was up by 10:30 or 11 o'clock last night, so if you were there late last night, you would have catch that on your way home. So you can catch that straight after the game on Saturday. But like I said to you, Forest are coming down, they call us the spreadsheet winkers, but at the end of the day, they understand how good we're going, as we say,
send Leeds down,
come on you bees. Send them down, Forest. But come on, you bees.
Come on, you bees. Brentford FC, come on, come on, you Brentford, come on, you bees, come on, you Brentford, come on, send them on, you bees.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.